Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, this is Pat Prescott for This Lady Loves Sports. We have a special guest today. He is a three-time NBA champ with the Lakers, a former coach, and a current ESPN analyst. Byron Scott joins us today.
Let's go!
Welcome to This Lady Loves Sports Podcast with Pat Prescott. Sports. She knows it all and is here to talk about it. So get ready to hear sports talk in a way that you've never heard before. It's This Lady Loves Sports Podcast. And here's your host, Pat Prescott.
Well, I know one person that knows This Lady Loves Sports, and he's in the studio with me right now, and that is Byron Scott. Former Laker, great three-time NBA champ. Got to give you credit for all of the rings.
Absolutely.
You're not wearing them.
No.
Do you ever wear them?
Every blue moon.
Okay.
Every blue moon.
When you just want to show off.
Yeah, when I want to show off, I want to just prove to people that I have earned these three. And it has to be a special occasion for me.
Yeah, I bet that when you were coaching, you would put them on every now and then.
Yeah, because I wanted guys to see. You know, I wanted these guys to see. Listen, this is what this is all about. It's about winning championships. So it was a great conversational piece, you know, for younger players, and they would always want to hold them and try them on and things mm-hmm. of that nature. And I said, okay, you can try them on, but give them back because this is mine. You got to get your own.
Yeah, I feel you. That's the way that has to go. And when you stopped coaching and became an ESPN analyst, I was so happy, not only because you're smart and you're funny and that particular job gave you a chance to like show more of your personality, but also because you got to wear those suits that you used to wear over there on the sideline.
Well, I think
look
you're
good
right,
in those
though.
Suits,
well, thank you, Pat.
I'm just there hanging
it.
In the closet. You're like,
yeah, where am I wear these two now? Yeah. You're right. That did give me a chance to wear them, but absolutely right about just being able to be me, you know, yeah. ESPN and just have fun. And the real Byron Scott kind of comes out, the personality, the funniness, and the joking, the guy that jokes around and all that good
yes,
stuff. Because you don't see that on the sideline because I am serious about what I do.
Oh, no question.
You know, so this is a whole different area that a lot of people don't get a chance to see on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's kind of like a tale of three careers. And let's go back to the beginning and talk about growing up here in Los Angeles. You know, I always say that at some point there should be an all-LA team and no one would beat them when you look at the great talent that has come out of the Los Angeles area. So talk about like your how you fell in love with sports, because that's a lot about what this program is about. We want to know your sports love story, because all of us who love it have that. And I know for you, it must have started when you were just a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I was 6-7 years old, you know, with a basketball in my hand, with a baseball in my hand, with a football. I mean, I was, when you talk about love sports, I love sports. I mean, whatever the season was is what I wanted to play. You know, me and my buddies, when I got old enough, when I was in the 6th, 7th grade, we would go down to play basketball during the basketball season. Then when it was baseball season, we had a field down in Inglewood that we would go play baseball. When it was football, we had another field that we would go play football on. And since I lived in Inglewood in the hood area, all our guys from First Avenue to 8th Avenue, we had so many guys that we knew we had enough to play 11-11 football and play baseball and all that. So I grew up just loving sports in general. And I think a lot of that is because I was so competitive. You know, I just wanted to play sports. I wanted to win. And it didn't matter what sport it was, you know. And I just really took to basketball probably a little bit more than the other ones when I got to high school. You know, when I got to high school is where I figured, you know what, I'm pretty good at this sport. You know, I'm a little bit better in this than I am the other two. And I decided to stick to basketball and try to make that a career.
As for someone who really excelled in your career, you know, who really went on to be a championship player, when did winning championships become important to you. Did you ever have a taste of that when you were coming up, like maybe in high school or AAU or any of that?
Yeah, high school. I didn't play AAU. It wasn't called AAU back then anyway. I mean, we played.
Was that Pop Warner?
It was BCI, Pop Warner. Yeah. You know, it's all changed, obviously. But when I was in high school, my senior year or my junior year in high school, we got to the state Final Four. And we lost to a team called Pasadena that had a guy named Dale Cook, who was a great high school player. And that's when I started wanting to win championships, you know, because I had that taste of defeat in my mouth. And I was like, I just don't want this again. And then getting to college, never really getting a chance to get to that, you know, Final Four, Sweet 16 in college. But then, you know, obviously my first year with the Lakers, you know, I mean, it was known right away. You know, Magic Johnson, those guys were like, listen, you know, we play to win championships, bottom line. You know, you're a rookie and this is how we do it. And so, I mean, it was embedded in me right away, you know, when I got with the Lakers, that this is what it's all about. And and from that point on, it was, you know, it was either win championships or it's a bust a season.
Yeah, talking about joining the Lakers, tell us about how that whole thing happened, because it's not that often that you get to go to your team,
right?
You know, to start off. I mean, we see it happen every now and then, and we're seeing more and more players now come and say it out loud. This is where I want to go,
right.
Which I think that's a whole other thing we'll talk about later. But tell us that whole story of joining the Lakers.
Well, you know, the crazy thing about it, I was drafted by the Clippers, and they were the San Diego Clippers at the time. And I was extremely happy because of the fact that, number one, it was close to home.
And you got drafted.
And I got drafted. Yeah, number one,
really?
You get drafted, you know. And number two, you're close to home, so your folks and your siblings and your friends don't have to drive all over the country to come see you.
And get you to buy tickets for them.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So I thought it was a great idea to be, you know, it was a great position to be in, be with the Clippers at that time. But, you know, they wasn't a very good basketball team. And Donald Sterling, God bless him now, because he traded me. You know, I was happy about that he traded me to the Lakers.
This is one of the things this man did that we actually liked.
Absolutely. It was one thing that I loved about him, that he traded me to the Lakers. And when I got there, it was just a whole different ball game. You know, just getting traded. I got traded for a very popular player in Norm Nixon. And it wasn't a very popular trade either. You know, and it was funny because of a few months after that trade, you know, Jerry West called me into his office and he said, listen, you know, I'm getting a lot of grief about all this stuff about me trading Norm for you. You know, who's this rookie? You know, we don't understand what Jerry's doing. Maybe he's lost his mind a little bit. And Jerry said, I'm going to tell you something, young man. He still calls me young man to this day. He says, young man, we're going to win more championships with you than we would have ever won with him. And these people are going to be kissing my you-know-what when it's all said and done. So when I leave his office, you know, the pressure that I felt was that I can't let him down. You know, I got to go out here and perform and play the best basketball I can to make sure that I give us a chance to win championships and do my job with all these other great players that we had. So that was kind of the start of it, you know, just getting drafted and then getting traded to the, you know, I always say to people, I went from the outhouse to the penthouse in a matter of weeks. And it was the best, you know, the best trade for me that could ever occur, you know, being traded to your home team, the team that you love, the team that you grew up admiring and wanted to be a part of.
And being here in L.A. too, then you really had to buy tickets.
Yeah.
Oh,
I had family and friends coming out the woodworks.
And they cost more too. So that's something to think about. You know, tell us what that brotherhood was like, because that was what those Laker teams felt like to me. You know, I've spent most of my adult life in New York. Mm-hmm. As you know, mm-hmm. I'm a longtime suffering Knicks fan. And I almost feel silly saying that at this point, because it's been so long it hadn't been since 94 that we've had anything to cheer for as Knicks fans. Not really. But I always looked at that group as like the prototype of what a team should be.
Yeah.
There seemed to be real leadership there, real camaraderie there, mm-hmm. and as you alluded to, the true desire to win.
Yeah, and real love, you know, for one another. I mean, we truly, truly cared about one another. We wanted each other to do extremely well. And I think that is evident today because of the fact that I see Magic almost two or three times a week at the gym. We always talk. I see James and talk to James and play golf with James. We see Coop at, you know, little events, and AC's my daughter's godfather.
Norman probably actually speaks to you now.
And Norman and I speak all the time. Yeah, yeah. Norm's because Norm comes to the gym as well. So we speak as well. Kareem, you know, I see Cap every now and then because he does the jump as well. So it's a brotherhood that I think has lasted over the last 20 years. And it's only one reason it's lasted because we went through so much as a group. We won so much. We lost some games. But we kept that camaraderie, you know, that love for each other to always support each other. And then even to this very day, you know, we could call each other. Magic can call me or James or any of us and say, I'm doing an event. And we're there. I mean, that's how we feel about each other. And I don't think you see a lot of teams like that anymore that have that type. Even the Celtic teams that we played against that were so great, I don't think they had that same type of camaraderie that we have.
Yeah, there was not the love. And you didn't feel so – it always felt like you guys were having fun with each other.
Yes.
And, you know, you talk about leadership. You can't talk about leadership in the Lakers without talking about the Buss family.
Mm-hmm.
And because it really comes from the top down. Seriously unique team ownership there. And I think, I had an opportunity, and you gonna help me do this again because I gotta get her on my podcast.
Sounds good.
To talk to Jeannie Buss.
Oh, yeah.
When she wrote the Laker Girl book, which, if you have not read this, you got to read this. This is such an important book, not just about the Lakers and about basketball, but really kind of about the history of LA and the history of her father's business and so many insights into her. This is a brilliant woman.
Yes.
And you understand why her father, you know, first I saw, isn't she cute? You know?
Don't let
she's
that fool
cute.
You.
Oh, don't she's let Phil's that, girlfriend and all that. But boy, this woman is something else. But it's something in the blood, isn't it?
Yeah. And like you said, she learned from the best. You know, Dr. Buss, who was an innovator, just understood what people wanted. When it came to basketball, he made it a spectator sport, you know, where even the actors and actresses that were coming were being entertained by some of the things that he was doing. I mean, brought in Laker girls. He brought in television, you know, when it was supposed to be blocked out in that certain area. He created, I can't remember the station, it was Prime Time or something that he created where you could see home games of the Lakers play.
Exactly. He really showed all the other franchises how to make that little extra money.
He did.
You know, he really changed the whole financial dynamic, I think, of basketball.
I think because even, Davis Stern was kind of like, wait a minute, you're going to do what? You're going to have Laker girls? You're going to do this? You're going to do that? He's like, yeah. And they started to follow that blueprint. So he was just an amazing owner. He would talk to anybody on that team from number one to number 13. You could call him and ask him for advice. And, I remember the first job that I had, the New Jersey job when I got fired. Dr. Buss was the first person to call me. He said, when you coming home?
Wow.
You know, I want you to come to a game and sit in the box with me, you know. And I just thought that was so cool, you know, that an owner of his stature would call me and say, hey, I don't know what they're doing. They messed up. But when you coming home, let's get together. And we did, you know, and I came home and went to a couple of games and sit there with him. And he asked me my opinion on things that were going on. And it was just special to have him in a room. It really was, because he just lit up the room. And he was about as normal as you and I, Pat. I mean, he didn't, I mean, just a true human being that cared about people.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the Laker family and coming together. And after Mr. Buss died, there was a really weird period in there.
Yeah.
That I think a lot of people like yourself, I think, felt really alienated from the whole Laker family. And then, of course, when Jeannie came back and took over, and now with Magic coming back, and now LeBron James,
oh, yeah,
or L.A. Bron.
Oh, yeah.
You know, coming together. It's interesting to watch. The family is coming together again. You can really see that. All of you guys are starting to show up. And what a great impact you can have on this team when you start getting all these people. Y'all should all just show up one day. Everybody put on all their rings. Just come in, just
that'd
sit.
That'd be a lot of rings, you know? Boy. That'd be a lot of rings.
That'd be a lot of rings, man. You know, because people will have to, like, shut up and then listen.
Yeah.
But I think they're ready. And, you know, LeBron James, let's talk about that a little bit.
Oh, wow.
And I would imagine that because of your position, you know, as an analyst and also as someone really close to Magic and close to the team, you kind of knew that this was coming down?
Well, I suspect it. You know, the one thing Irvin and I don't do is talk about what's going on in his world. You know,
and
I don't
can't really,
and he shouldn't. Yeah. You know, and I don't ask.
Not in specifics,
right?
Anyway.
And I don't ask. I mean, we talk in general about the game of basketball and what we're doing this week or whatever. And you know, we always give our each other our big hugs and things of that nature, and ask about family and things. But I really had a feeling that LeBron was coming here, and for two reasons. Number one, because Jeannie had taken back over the organization, so I knew the organization was in good hands. And then when she hired Magic,
Magic and Rob came along, it was clear that they meant business.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they were getting back to the winning ways and how important it is to put that purple and gold on. So I had a really good feeling that if Magic could sit down with LeBron James for 5 minutes, LeBron James would be a Laker. And, you know, so as we got closer to that and you kept hearing the buzz and, you know, I talked to Irvin about, you know, how that conversation went, which was really funny to me and it was great. And I won't go into that, but I said, Buck, I knew if you got a chance to sit in front of him, he was going to be a Laker. And he said, B, you know me. I'm going to just talk to him like I talk to you. You know, I'm going to keep it real. And I think LeBron respected that. He appreciated it. And I think he also knows the history of putting on that purple and gold.
Oh, and LeBron understands the history of the game, period, and the value of veterans and what you can learn from people who have, you know, if you're walking through a minefield, walk behind somebody.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. I ain't going to walk beside you. I ain't going to walk in front of you. I'm
gonna
walk
you show in. Me where the I'm safe
gonna,
spots
step,
are.
Every footstep you step, I'm going to take until you step on one. Then I'm I'm going to go a different way.
But, you know, LeBron's coming to the Lakers was a lot different from your coming to the Lakers simply because of the fact that back then no one would know unless you told them until the next day when maybe the papers came out. But now there is nothing that is a secret. And LeBron dropped a whole lot of clues, you know, when he bought that house here. And, you know, everybody knows his son was in Sierra Canyon and Scottie Pippen's son.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're like, so let me see. We're going to live in Cleveland, but our son is going to be playing basketball in L.A.
I don't think so. Yeah.
You know, and you can't hide anything now.
No,
everything you can. It's public knowledge. Just go online. You can Google what the property sales were and stuff like that.
Right. And we also know that he's real big into movies now. He's executive producer, a bunch of movies. So where else are you going to be if you want to get in the movie industry? You know, so like you said, he dropped a bunch of hints and you got to give him credit, you know, and his other people, you know, Rich Paul and those guys, they didn't come out and say anything. They were quiet about it, but they were dropping hints all year long. And I had a lot of people at the gym was like, what are you going to do? I said, he's coming to L.A., you know, and I said it so nonchalantly that they was like, really? I was like, yeah. Why do you think that? I just got a feeling. You know, I just got a feeling.
Yeah.
So I was probably just as thrilled as anybody when he signed or when he said he was coming to Los Angeles. I was jumping up and down, you know, because I knew that was going to put the purple and gold back on the map.
Well, I had to smile, though, because I was just thinking about how many people who have perennially hated the Lakers,
mm-hmm.
how much hate there must be now. Boy, people must be really pissed because
I remember
really hating the Lakers.
Yeah.
OK, because I was a Knicks fan.
I mean,
that was obvious.
Right.
You had to hate the Lakers. And then when I moved out here, you know how much the Knicks sucked in the 2001. That was when I moved out here. And that was when Shaq and Kobe were rolling.
Running.
It got very difficult after. It's hard to keep hating a team that wins all the time,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, and that you really admire a lot of the, and who doesn't love Shaquille O'Neal?
Yeah,
and even when
Shaq.
Kobe was somebody who we just thought was a great player who was weird,
mm-hmm.
you know, you still had to like and respect him for what he did,
yes.
you know, and now we're getting to see more of who he is,
which is
a wonderful thing too. But you know, people are going to be hating on the Lakers again.
No doubt.
A lot. They're
no
mad.
Doubt. Yeah.
Because LeBron was the prize.
He was the prize of the free agent market this season. And he comes to the purple and gold. And just like Magic and Jeannie, they know that he will attract others, you know, in this next year or two. He's going to attract others. So they,
everywhere he goes.
Yeah. That's just him. That's his brand. That's the type of impact he has on the NBA and whatever team that he chooses to be a part of. And Fortunately for us here in Los Angeles, it's the Los Angeles Lakers that he's chosen to be a part of for the next 4 years.
Yeah, he is the rising tide that will really raise, I think, everybody around him. But I was really pleased with the team last year with those young kids, you know, with Kyle Kuzma and Brandon. I mean, that's Ingram, nice. So when he came, my first thought was, ooh, they're going to get rid of some of those people. I love Julius Randle.
Right.
But you know, the thing is, and I think this about people, about players, who get traded a lot. You know, you look at people like Jamal Crawford. I mean, you get traded because you're good. You're a good piece. You don't get traded like that unless you are something that's a valuable piece that people can offer when they're trying to get something else.
Yeah, most of the guys get traded or traded for a reason because they are very valuable. And like you said, they can go to another team and still perform. Jamal Crawford's been doing it for years. You know, it doesn't diminish what you've been able to accomplish in the league. Julius Randle, like you said, I'm going to miss Julius here in that purple and gold because I love Julius.
And when every time y'all have to play him, boy,
you know, and he's
gonna
a bull. He's a bull. I mean, he's so strong
and
athletic. He's such a great guy, too. I loved him as a person even more than I did as a basketball player. But like you said, to get LeBron and to keep Kuzman and Ingram and Ball and those young guys who started to really play well last year, he's going to elevate their play.
Yeah.
Because he's going to demand that these guys play well. He's going to demand that they work hard in practice, that they work hard in games, that they don't take plays off. So he's going to bring a certain amount of energy. And I think Rondo is too. Rondo's a veteran guy.
Can't sleep on that.
Yeah, he's a pit bull type guy. You know, Lance Stevens, pit bull type. So now he got some dogs in there that's going to go after people. And that means everybody else got to raise their game up this on the team. So all you guys that were there last year, you better be ready and get yourself ready for training camp in the regular season, preseason, because it's going to be a ride.
And you know, the moves that are being made are really kind of quietly brilliant, too. I mean, you look at those veterans, I mean, the one-year deals, which is – it's going to be nice because that's going to give you some flexibility next time around.
Yes.
You know, even the whole thing with LeBron. I mean, if you compare coming to the Lakers to his going to Miami, first of all, the decision and the big rally and all that other stuff and waiting all summer to find out what was going to happen. I thought it was kind of cool. Free agency starts. Boom, I'm going.
I thought
to
it
LA.
Was real cool.
Let's stop talking because people were saying, oh, we're going to have to hear you talk about LeBron James.
Yeah, draw this thing out. Yeah.
No, now we're talking about the LA Lakers.
Right. I thought it was great on his part that he didn't do it like he did the first time.
But he's matured a lot, too.
Yeah, he has. Because the first time I thought was a mistake. You know, I really did. You know, you can make your decision and you don't have to do it on national TV.
Somebody suggested that to him and it sounded like a cool idea.
Yeah, and it wasn't. You know, but I love the way he did it this year. He just flew in. I'm coming.
Exactly.
You know, he didn't have all the hoopla and all that stuff. But like you said, he's matured. And when you listen to LeBron, you could tell that he's very mature. He understands exactly what he wants in life. He understands how he's trying to help so many people as he did in Ohio.
And we'll continue to do it in Ohio.
Yeah, we'll continue to do it in Ohio. You know? You know, he's got charity events that he loves doing. He's given over $40 million of his money to some of these events. So he is real big into giving back into the community.
And doesn't like to talk about it a lot.
He just likes to do it.
Let his actions do all the talking for him. So we're kind of looking forward to the LeBron James era here. You know, we were talking about losing players and that making those hard decisions where you have to trade and stuff. And I know this is a lot of what you had to do as a coach.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling that you still kind of love coaching. I mean, when I hear you do an analysis on TV, I'm like, this dude is still a coach.
It's still in my blood. You know what I mean, Pat? It's still in my blood, and I do love it because I do love the camaraderie. I do love strategizing for games. I love practice. I love preparing. And then, obviously, you love the actual game, you know, and I love competing, you know, so I still love it.
What about the traveling, though?
The traveling gets old.
That's a
you know
bit
what I mean?
Much,
yeah,
right?
The traveling gets old. But the traveling is better now because you got your own planes and you can go when
it's
you
true.
Want to.
That's a different
so
kind
a whole
of traveling.
There's a whole lot of difference than when we traveled back in the day where you had to catch the first thing smoking. You know, so there's still so many great things about the NBA that I love. The coaching part, you know, like I said, I've kind of given up on that, you know, per se, but I love it.
Oh, you've given up on the NBA coaching? But what about college?
College I would definitely think about, you know, because I would love to get some of these guys before they get to the, you know, to the pro level, because hopefully I can teach them, because it's hard when you get them there, you know, because I've had guys that I would tell, listen, you should have learned this in high school. You know, so we're going over all these things that you should have learned 3 or 4 years ago. So if I can get them early, I can get them more prepared for when they do get to the NBA. And that would be a joy. That would really be a joy.
Yeah, well, I know that people who love being involved in sports, athletes, people who are athletes who, you know, retire, y'all get to retire so early. I hate you a little bit for that. And with real money, too. And as a coach, let me just say, Byron, you know, as somebody who's a friend, who I consider myself to be a friend of yours.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, when they would fire you, I was like, Byron's getting paid. Byron's getting paid.
Anyway, he's still getting paid.
Byron getting paid. Now he can lay back and chill, rest a minute, and think, now which team do I want to go to next? And what do I want to do next? And I was not surprised at all to see you become an NBA analyst. And as I was alluding to earlier, I love seeing you on the jump. I love seeing you and they put you on everything. Did I not see you eating worms with Michelle Beadle?
You did. Well, it wasn't worms.
Oh, what was it?
It was grasshoppers. It was grasshoppers.
That's pretty close.
But it was, yeah.
You were eating bugs with Michelle Beadle. Pat, I could not believe it. I said, no, Byron's not going to eat that with Michelle. He's not.
Well, Jalen was like, nah, y'all can have that. You know, but I'm like, and always been very adventurous type guy when it comes to food. You know, I'll try anything once. You know, so Michelle was like,
during the break,
I was like, Michelle, what is that? She said, oh, these are grasshoppers, and I want to eat these on the show. And I'm trying to get Mike and Jalen. They both like, no, we ain't doing it.
Well, plus, you weren't going to let that girl eat
bugs. Oh, that's the other thing. I was like, Michelle, I can't let you eat it, and I'm not eating it.
I thought Jalen would eat it just because.
I was going to man up.
I
thought so too. But Jalen was like, no, I ain't going there. So when she said, you know, coach, let's have some, I said, yeah, let's try them out. And it was, be honest with you, it was pretty good.
Yeah, well, you know, I was watching, as I often do, you know, because I'm that person that, you know, like, I'll watch football all day Sunday, mm-hmm. watch Sunday night, and then watch SportsCenter and watch the highlights of the games I just watched. And then watch on Monday and Thursday night.
Yep,
let's not forget
Thursday night football too.
And so I do see a lot, and I'm, you know, sports on television has become so interesting mm-hmm. when there's something happening. When there's mm-hmm. not much happening,
right,
it's kind of funny to watch y'all try to make something out of nothing. Those days must be some of the more interesting and challenging ones, aren't they?
They are. When the game is boring and one team is killing another and there's really not much to talk about, it is a little bit of a challenge.
But that's when your personalities really come out.
Yeah, that's when you just, for me at least, that's when I just have fun.
Yeah.
You know, I just really try to have fun.
And there's a lot of that going on these shows. And one of the things that I find to be just wonderful is watching the women in sports now, because I'm talking about sports journalism. Who are the analysts and all that? Because there was a time when, you know, it was just, let's put a little pretty girl here and mm-hmm. let her read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that is not the case anymore. Mm-mm. These are knowledgeable women with a point of view. And I love Michelle Beadle.
Oh, I love
Michelle. Because Michelle is like a dude. And she's like one of the dudes, man. You can tell. Does she have brothers?
I don't know.
I know dad turned her into a Spurs fan and all that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, she's big time Spurs fan. Yeah.
But I just love her irreverence and how she go toe to toe with Marcellus Wiley or whoever it is. It doesn't matter.
She don't back down.
And she knows how to laugh it off too.
She does. She's funny, like you said, great sense of humor, but very knowledgeable about the game. I love Michelle Beatles. Rachel Nichols is one of my
favorites. Rachel Nichols is also awesome. Carrie
love
Champion.
I've loved her
since she used to do
Stay Still.
Tennis.
Loved it. I mean, we have some great women that are in sports that not only are beautiful, but very intelligent. And it's really fun to listen to them as well.
And let's not forget Jamel Hill, who I really think has gotten screwed over.
Yeah, she did. I don't know what happened with that, but they lost a very good person. A very good person.
Yeah, a very good person. And she will definitely survive
and do what she's going to do.
I know as someone who, I think every coach is a teacher. And I think you've definitely got that teacher in you. And that probably has a lot to do with why you wrote your book, Slam Dunk Success. And I'd like to kind of close with just a little bit about the book and about what you'd like to see people be able to get from the things that you have learned in your life and career.
Well, Slam Dunk Success was a book that was done by me and my business partner, Charlie Norris. And we just thought that it was great that we had an unbelievable relationship. And if you look at the cover of this book, it has two arcs. And the first one is that don't judge a book by its cover, because I'm a 6'4 ex-athlete and, you know, dark and handsome and all that good stuff. And this is a
And
five,
modesty is one of your many qualities.
Absolutely.
I see.
and my buddy's about a 5'8 Jewish guy. It's about 70-something years old. And we couldn't look. We do look totally different, obviously. And
yeah, it's a little Mutt and Jeff thing going
on
there.
Yeah, but we have a lot in common. And we thought it would be interesting for people to understand that, you know, sports and business, running a business company and running a sports team has a lot of similarities.
And how did the two of you get to
We met at Equinox Gym in West L.A. 12 years ago. And we started to work out a year after we met. And we just really hit it off. And gotten to know his family extremely well, as he's gotten to know my family. And really what we're trying to let people know through this book, that it's probably easier to be the next Charlie Norris than it is to be the next Byron Scott. And you can get the same enjoyment by being a business person or being an entrepreneur and making that big sale as you can by winning championships or winning basketball games. It's the same type of drill. Same type of thrill, same type of adrenaline. And especially when I go to inner city kids, Pat, I always talk to them about, you know, try to be the next Charlie Norris. You know, it's so few of us that get a chance to get out and be successful in sports, basketball, baseball, football, whatever it may be. But the odds are so much easier. I wouldn't say, you know, it's easy to be a successful businessman, but it's a lot easier than being a professional athlete. You know, I mean, when you just look at the odds. So that's
one
of the
things. There are a lot more slots available for the businessmen than there are for the athletes.
A whole lot more. So we go to a lot of inner city schools and we talk to the kids about, you know, about what we've done and our passion, about my passion for basketball, his passion for business, and how they come together and correlate. And we also try to tell these kids that whatever you decide you want to do, make sure you do it at 110%. You know, go all out for it. But if you don't make it, make sure you have something to fall back on. And that's when we start really hitting the educational part of it.
Well, if you had to pick the top three things that you want people to learn from this book, if you're speaking to a group of people, young or old, what are three main principles of success that you see that are universal?
I think number one, you got to be willing to listen. If you're a leader, you got to be willing to listen. You got to be willing to listen to other people's ideas. Now, you might not take that advice, but you got to be willing to listen. You got to be open. Number two, you have to ask that second and third question. And then there's a lot of times where we meet people and, you know, we'll say, you're just like Charlie and I, when people would come up to us when we were working out, they was like, why are you guys working out together? Then they would walk away. They never asked, you know, really, why are you working out together? And what do you guys have in common? You know, why do you guys? They never ask the second or third question. That's how you get to know people. And the third thing is celebrate your failures. So when you fall down or when you fail at something, you know, learn from that, you know, take that and learn from it. And then it'll apply it to your next journey. You know, get back up and go at it again, but celebrate those failures, because a lot of times we only celebrate the success that we have in life. But sometimes those failures that you've had have gotten you to those successes. You know, so those are three things that we really, really hit on in the book and we think are very important.
Yeah. Well, if you're not failing, you're not learning.
That's right.
And the more that you can get happening, the better. But I tell you what. Yours is a career that has been wonderful to this point, and we only expect more great things to come from you and hope you'll be coming back periodically and visiting us on This Lady Loves Sports.
Pat, whenever you call, I'm here.
The coach is in the building. Coach Byron Scott, thank you so much for stopping by
today. Thank you, Pat. I appreciate it.
I'm Pat Prescott.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.